Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bloodmancer by N.D. Redding. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. Chapter 1. One of the two remaining Ares battleships protecting the orbital platforms of Ginja II finally gave in, and hundreds of escape capsules torpedoed toward the planet. Most of them were empty, and those that were occupied were considered death coffins. There was no chance for an Ares ship to survive the onslaught of the infamous Hazard Fleet. Yet they tried. The Ares always tried. "Hail the other ship again," I ordered, more or less certain what the enemy captain would say.
"Patching you through, Captain," Mido replied with a calm voice.
He'd changed over the last several years and had become much calmer than he had been when we had just taken possession of the tannery. The face of Captain Dares Tark in Fable popped up only several seconds later. His expression was rather somber but resolute. "Captain, there's no chance you can defend that platform. You and your men will die in the attempt. Be reasonable. Let us inspect the platform. Our goal is not destruction. We will leave all personnel alive, and that also includes your crew." As expected, my words fell on deaf ears.
"I am an Ares. I do not give in to the enemy. If you have nothing else to say, traitor, I'm waiting for you on the station."
The captain cursed us, our lineage, our worlds, Fars and me in particular, and then he rambled on about loyalty and finally cut us off. I turned to Fars and shrugged. This wasn't the first time we fought Ares forces. I had failed miserably in turning the Golden Empire to our cause in the last 10 years. Their loyalty was unshakable, and the harder I tried, the more they resisted.
"Can you use that thing?"
Fars asked almost pleadingly. I sighed, dreading what he asked of me once again, but there was no real reason to deny him this wish except that it hurt like hell. "All right, get those shields down and prepare 2 nanite torpedoes.
"On it, Captain,"
Mido replied again, and the ship shuddered slightly.
"Fars, you should accept that your race is the enemy. We can't push Richard to the brink of death every time we fight the Ares,"
Freya said, turning around from her pilot console. Fars grunted, but otherwise said nothing. "It's fine," I replied for him. "Scouts have reported no enemies in surrounding systems. I can take small risks every now and then." Freya took a deep breath and turned back to her console without saying a word. She was my wife, but on the bridge, I was still her superior. And she respected that, to my surprise, especially since the woman was a fireball all around. We had the Ares ship and station surrounded by our 2 destroyers, the Redeemer and the Crimson Death. In a coordinated salvo of cannon fire, we stripped the enemy ship of its shields within a single minute. The return fire from the cruiser barely managed to scrape the Redeemer, which didn't say much since our ships had been heavily modified and upgraded. "Fire the torpedoes at the thickest part of the enemy ship's hull. They wouldn't do as much damage if we struck other parts of the ship." The Ares cruiser deployed countermeasures to stop the impact, but the Redeemer's Alpha Squadron of fighters made sure the torpedoes would land, even if it cost the pilots their lives. They were fanatics, after all, and despite not liking it, they were damn effective up to the moment they screamed into their comms and their fighters exploded. I lowered my hands onto my armchairs and closed my eyes as I tried to establish contact. "Deploy the emitter drone." A small, round object detached from our hull and flew to a point halfway between the Crimson Death and the Ares cruiser at an incredible speed, and then waited there, hovering in place after it went into stealth mode.
"Emitter drone in position," Mido said.
The drone's task was to amplify the reach at which I could control nanites. It took me 6 years to develop the skills and technology to accomplish this maneuver. It took me another 2 years of training to keep myself from dying while I performed it. I felt the 2 massive batches of nanites within the torpedoes lodged in the Ares cruiser. The connection was established, and I had some 4 to 5 minutes that I could allow myself control over them. Anything over that, and I'd burn my own brain out. I spread the nanites through the Ares ship, aiming for the weapon controls and engines. Destroying the electronic infrastructure of those systems wasn't too hard, but reaching them often caused a lot of harm to the ship. I felt the nanites breach through food processing services, atmosphere control, and gravity inhibitors. With every tendril of nanites that moved toward their ultimate goal, more subsystems were irrevocably destroyed, and more stress was put on my mind. I was sweating and breathing heavily, but I could focus little on my physical body. My entire mind was spiritually on the Ares ship, together with the billions of nanites that tore it apart, piece by piece. I knew Freya's gaze was on me the whole time. She hated this maneuver that I aptly called the Wolf's Knock. By the time I was done with the Ares cruiser, I had destroyed most of its systems without causing too much physical damage. I hadn't planned on destroying their atmosphere controls, so they'd had to abandon ship, but at least I hadn't killed anyone. As I returned mentally back into my own body, I felt a stinging pain shoot through my chest and my heart started to race. I began coughing and shaking uncontrollably.
"You need to see me in the infirmary, Captain. Have someone take you there immediately. The scans show damage to..."
"Enough!" I snapped and looked at Fars. "Freya, you have the ship." Freya nodded and accepted stoically, though I knew she'd give me the business end of the stick later when we were alone. As Mido pumped me full of who knew which chemicals, the boarding alarms started blaring through the ship, but only for 10 seconds. Freya had finally ordered a company of our marines to board the orbital platform of Ginja 2. I kept my eyes glued on my INAS and the ship's cameras as I sat in an improvised recliner. The pain wasn't so bad, but I was having trouble keeping my bearings.
"Captain, I need to go," Fars said, and I just nodded.
"Do your job, Fars. Don't show pity to those who don't deserve it." He walked out the sickbay without another glance, and several minutes later he was leading his men to the dropships. Good, I thought. The platform wouldn't provide any more resistance. Otherwise, Fars would have had his soldiers fired out the death drops right through the station's hull. That tactic was very effective, but it was often also very deadly, hence the ominous name. I don't know if it was from Mido's medicine or the exhausting Wolf's Knock maneuver, but I fell asleep like a baby when I saw the transporters pull out from Tonnery's insides. When I woke up some hours later, Freya was standing over me with Fars to her side.
"How are you doing?" she asked. "Had a good rest?"
I nodded. "Did you find anything? Do they know where?" Their silence was answer enough. Another failed attempt to find clues to Bardina. Another painfully pointless mission. More wasted resources, time wasted, lives lost, and another humiliating explanation that I'd have to give to the DA. "I'm fine," I said as I pushed myself into a sitting position. The pain in my chest was gone, but I still felt weak and dizzy.
"Can you stand on your own?" Freya asked as she studied me worriedly and then shot Fars a hostile glance. The big guy just shrugged it off.
"Yeah, I can. But is there nothing? Like, not a single clue? What were they making down there?"
"Gravitation stabilizers," Fars answered. "The Joltans didn't try to hide anything. They were scared shitless when we arrived. There was no resistance. I interrogated their leader, and he opened up like a case of fruit. He told me the Imani commissioned gravitation stabilizers almost a decade ago."
"Then why would they have the entire system in radio silence? Why did we have to pay this information in detrium to the Takari Gorshin Lord?"
"That's what I asked the Joltan, but he explained they had a very profitable contract with the Imani and that they didn't ask many questions. Fucking Joltans."
"Richard, we need to get back to the Gorgon and take the ships to Primatea. The crew is tired. Our ammunition reserves are at 23%, and that's about it. Leo agrees, too. His crew wants to see their families again. It's been almost a year." Another whole year was wasted. Since we dispatched our ship from Primatea 10 years ago, we have been running circles through the galaxy trying to find a single clue that could lead us to Bardina. But so far, we had found absolutely nothing. I could have sworn I could sense Karasha's evil laughter from the holding cell.
The Imani Absolute was a constant reminder of how utterly devious our enemy could be. 10 years of setting out to find something, anything, and returning tired and depressed to Primatea for restocking and R&R. Setting out again after finding some ridiculous clue, a whiff of an idea, a whisper of treasure, and then finding nothing once again. All the while, the Federation was tinkering with the DNA code of my species, brainwashing them, turning our bodies into abominations that served the Federation's cause. World by world, city by city. Only the original two colonies were untouched, apparently, Earth and Mars. But that, too, was only a hopeful rumor, and I had little trust in hearsay. Fine, set course for the Gorgon. Let's hope the transport womb will have enough space for us so we can jump to Primatea.
They do,
Freya said, and immediately realized she spilled the beans. How can they already have answered, Freya? Tell me you didn't contact them before we hit Ginja 2. Freya said nothing. She just looked at me apprehensively and shrugged her shoulders. She had probably expected to find nothing here and was already prepared for disappointment before we even got to our mission. It was a dangerous attitude on board a ship. Some would call it calculated, but I strongly disagreed. You either put everything you had into the mission or you didn't. Hovering between success and failure brought you nowhere. Fine, just go, I said, waving them both away. I sat on the bed, thinking about the whole situation, as one of the infirmary bots prodded me for any signs of harm, when Arthur walked in half an hour later. He still wore a contraption that stopped other alloy minds from interfering with him. This one wasn't a grotesque machine helmet, but a simple collar around his neck. He was carrying 2 full glasses of black reindeer in each hand and pushed one into mine.
Cheers, he said, gulping down the drink, and I followed in kind. To another failed mission by the glorious Admiral Richard Stavos of the Dusk Ascendancy.
Hear, hear, I answered with a smile and took another sip. The alloy Templar still hadn't changed a bit in the last 10 years. He remained within his torn and ravaged 1,000-year-old body, still pretty reluctant to wear anything but a piece of cloth between his legs when he was off duty. It was disconcerting at the very least.
At least nobody died.
Half the crew of the first Ares cruiser died, I replied with a hint of annoyance.
The enemy doesn't count.
Tell that to Fars. He begged me for another wolf knock.
I know. I saw you going at it.
I put the drink down and slowly got up from the bed. I felt my strength steadily returning to my limbs. The shakes were almost completely gone.
Going back to Primatea?
Yeah, I said, realizing why he came.
I'm not.
You're not going to be on Primatea. You'll be who knows where while we're in alloy space because you can't stand being close to your own kind. I know. I just wished you'd tell me where you spent all that downtime. I make up crazy ideas in my mind when someone doesn't want to tell me what's what.
Is there sex, violence, drugs, gambling, and dangerous scum of the galaxy involved in your crazy ideas?
Almost exclusively.
Well then, Admiral, as always, you're right.
Just don't overdo it, all right? I don't want to see you burned out. He nodded and flashed me what passed for a smile before leaving me there with a half-filled glass.
Bastards.
All of them used underhanded ways to get info out of me. 4 days later, the Gorgon transported our fleet to DA space. Traveling in the asteroid-sized ship was a weird experience. As with most alloy technology, it seemed like the whole thing was a living, breathing organism, but in fact it was an asteroid molded into a spacecraft over hundreds of years. In a sense, it was an organism, or an amalgamation of several million tiny organisms that made up the systems, walls, and almost everything else but the giant engines. It truly felt like you parked your ships inside the womb of a giant being. Once we landed on Primatea, a call came in. We were immediately called to the War Council, headed by officials from the DA, several convictionists, and an alloy in a Templar suit known only as the Far Voice. I refused to go this time to the protest of both Freya and the entire council. I postponed the meeting for a week, and only sent them a brief explanation of our findings, or the lack thereof. As much as I wanted to find Bardina, the last year combined with my recent Wolf's Knock maneuver took a toll on me. I hadn't had the stomach to listen to them complain about the efficiency of my approach. They were constantly pushing to have more alloy ships in my fleet, therefore more oversight and less control of my own people, and the constant questions about Arthur's whereabouts. Even 10 years into our shaky alliance, the alloy didn't waste an opportunity to have the alloy return to their circles. Freya and I took a shuttle to Highmall Creek, where we lived for the last 8 years. Truth be told, we spent most of our time in space aboard the Crimson Death, me as admiral and her as my pilot, and I never actually considered our villa in the Pyrian Mountains to be home. But it was a welcome change from the halls of our flagship. The soil beneath my feet. It almost made me feel at home. We had gotten used to spending our days there just giving in to our needs and desires. Drones took care of our every wish as we spent the time taking long walks across the hills and mountains, bathing in the almost freezing waters of Highmall Creek, or just making love outside in the sun without any prying eyes or Mido's status updates. In the first years of our time together at the villa, I'd wake up several times in the night, certain I had heard noises. At any moment, I had expected Ares Bakri soldiers to pop out from the surrounding forests and murder both of us in our sleep. Freya would find me in the morning dressed in my fire armor, sleeping on the patio like a rock. It was just so vastly different than what I was used to that I just couldn't comprehend the idea that there was a spot in this galaxy where I could actually feel safe and calm. As the years passed, I had gotten used to it. I still would wake up in the night, sometimes screaming Bardina from the top of my lungs, but instead of dressing up for combat, I'd have a glass of water and return to a warm bed. In the last 2 or 3 years, we developed sort of a traditional camping night the first evening we spent there. Instead of sleeping under yet another roof, we would walk up the nearest hill and camp under the stars. After a year aboard an interstellar vessel where you're sentenced to your meager quarters, sleeping under the stars in fresh air felt like your soul was feeding on freedom. We would usually cook breakfast right at the hill the morning after, and I thought I'd get up earlier to surprise Freya, but when I woke up, she was already sitting outside, back turned to our tent.
"Morning,"
I said with a gaping yawn. She turned around and smiled.
"What's with the ominous glaring into the distance at dusk?"
"Sit down," she said, gesturing me to sit next to her. "You all right? Did you sleep well?"
"Richard, we've got to talk," she just said, and turned to stare into my eyes.
"Did someone die? Is there a problem? Did the council contact you? Have we—"
"Shut up, please, for a moment. This doesn't have to do with any of that."
"All right, sure," I said as my anxiety spiked. Nothing made me more nervous than going into a battlefield or hearing Freya say we need to talk.
"All right, big man. Here it is," she said, inhaling deeply. "You're going to be a dad."
"Oh," I replied, unable to comprehend what she just said. She first scowled at me and then slapped my shoulder.
"Wait, no, I didn't mean it like that." "Then how did you mean it?"
"I had all these crazy ideas flashing through my mind where you were about to run off with a warlord, or that you wanted to start dating the Imini prisoner or something."
"Wait, what?" she hissed, slapping me again.
"Yeah, I know. Poor taste, huh? But joke aside, shit.
I'm going to be a dad, huh?"
I felt my lips curl up and my whole face turn into a grin. I pulled her in my arms and hugged her. Our villa that sat on Highmall Hill suddenly looked very different. It didn't seem like a resort anymore, a recluse for our troubled minds and tired bodies. Instead, it took the shape of a home, something we had desperately needed and now had. Shit, I was going to be a dad. Chapter 2. I felt like making fresh lemonade for some odd reason. Everything was strange lately, and this morning was no different. Once done, I filled an extra large cup for Freya and handed it to her. She was seated comfortably in a recliner on the deck overlooking the hills and valleys of High Creek. Her eyes sparkled as she saw the glass.
For me?
Who else do you see here?
Would it hurt you to give me a normal response?
I shrugged. No, but the question demanded a stupid response. Freya let out a deep sigh and took the offered glass.
You'll never change, will you?
Maybe, maybe not. She put the glass to her lips and drank a sip, spat it back out, and then coughed.
What the hell is this? How many lemons did you put in that lemonade, Richard?
Around 10. Just enough to fill up 2 glasses.
You're supposed to add water and sweetener to it, not just lemons.
Oh, right, I muttered. Sorry, never made or had any. She laughed, her voice a sweet melody in my ears. This wasn't the first time I messed up using earthen ingredients. I had no idea that the Duskers had saved so many vegetable and fruit species from back home. I was very careful with the archaic food sources, as not too long ago, I was stricken with severe fever after eating a raw potato. Ancient foods were impractical, expensive, and time-consuming. They were fun to eat if prepared right, and incredibly delicious. The Duskers could afford such a lifestyle. They had so much time and so little to do that some of them devoted entire centuries to things like cooking food. Back on Persei Prime, the term cooking was pretty much reduced to pressing a sequence of 3 buttons on a holographic display. The resulting blob of nutrients and taste regulators was your fabulous dinner. Sure, there was complicated food somewhere in the upper echelons, but I never had any, as I didn't deem it worthy splurging a month's pay to a single dinner. Once I was done with adding in water and sugar, I brought the glasses back out and slumped down next to Freya. She was busy reading something, so I opened my iNAS to check the latest news while sipping on lemonade. It tasted acidic and horrible, and yet I felt weirdly compelled to finish the glass. There had been an info drop last night from the Federation, a jumble of news that was anywhere between a month and several decades old. Those info drops came in sporadically through the Alloy Network and rarely carried any important news, but I was still excited every time I had gotten my hands on some. I narrowed the search down by following the tag human and the amount of information severely dropped. Freya saw the somber expression on my face when I began digging through old news. It was the usual Federation propaganda bullshit, some of it older than a decade. Trade reports, political squabble, fashion news, advertisement, and all the stuff the Federation did not need to protect. My eyes suddenly stopped on a tag I hadn't seen in a long time. Persei Prime. I was both excited and terrified when I read the name. The timestamp said it was some 18 months old and came from a freighter 20 light years from the planet itself. It seemed to have been a transmission between the freighter and a mining station in the Hurkin asteroid belt. It was only several lines long. Falcon 3 requesting permission to land for repairs. We have several hundred souls on board. Persei Prime has been purged. We're low on fuel, food, and medicine. Please give permission to land. There was no response from the mining station and no additional transmissions. The message had been recorded by someone and lost in the network, only to be jumbled up with all the other random information. I turned off the iNAS and stared into the distance for several aching moments as I tried to comprehend the implications of this message.
Are you all right? Freya asked, seeing me mentally wander off.
Persei Prime has been destroyed, I said under my breath. I felt a lump in my throat and tears swell up in my eyes. I knew this had been coming for a while. I knew they wouldn't spare Persei Prime, but as long as I didn't know for sure, a part of me wouldn't accept it. My parents, family, and friends, they were all gone now. They were reduced to being mindless servants for the Imani. Freya didn't say anything else. She just hugged me, and we sat there in silence on our perfect little island of happiness.
Perhaps all is not lost. Maybe they escaped on one of those freighters. There's plenty of rogue traders who rescue refugees nowadays.
Perhaps, I said, and let the words die on my lips. I didn't want to go deeper into the implications. The chances were one in a billion, and hope was not something I could cling on to, or something that I actually wanted to cling on to at this point. For every 100 souls that made their way off-planet and out of Federation space, a billion died and another billion were transported to biovats. I need to go, I said after a minute passed. Maybe two. I had lost track of time. Freya nodded. She knew I couldn't finish our little vacation knowing what had happened to Persei Prime. There would be no peace in this place for me until this was over. I went straight for my gear and weapons. I wanted to appear ready before the convictionists so they understood the urgency. I put on my fire armor, my insignias and medals, my admiral's jacket and hat. Freya stood in the doorway, waiting until I was ready, and only then spoke. What are you going to tell them? I didn't know what to tell them, to be honest. The alloy hegemony didn't care about Persei Prime or any other human planet. They indulged me here and there when I helped a convoy of refugees instead of continuing my search for Bardina. But even that was met with protest by some. All they ever wanted of me was to find that damned planet, not to play savior of mankind. I'll ask them for more ships and continue the search. It's all I can do, and it's all they would allow me to do. Persei Prime is gone. I can't save it now. My parents are dead, and so are my friends and the rest of my family. I can't bring them back to life, but I can do everything I can to stop those fucking bastards from doing any more harm to our people. You know I can't come with you, Freya said, crossing her arms. The DA won't let pregnant women pilot military ships. I had completely forgotten about that. The Dusk Ascendancy seemed quite progressive and so much more civilized than the old worlds, but some of their rules, especially regarding gender, were so archaic it bordered on the ridiculous. Children were still brought into the world in the most natural way possible. Of course, they used plenty of medication to ease the birth process, and it wasn't nearly as painful as nature intended, but it was still very primitive. Persei Prime parents had plenty of options. You could go all natural if you wanted, you could let your child grow in an artificial womb, or you could even pick some of the DNA yourself if you had the credit for it. But here it was something very different. Personal. Maybe if I put in a word, they'll... I don't want you to put in a word. It's fine, Richard. This is the right way. I won't see my child. We'll be here when you're back. I felt a knot being tied deep in my gut. The pain seemed all too real. But I bit through it. I would be back again and live the rest of my life out alongside them. The whole thing pissed me off. There was plenty of space on the Crimson Death for our family. We had the best damned healer in the hegemony, and it was all for nothing. I barely managed to keep a straight face, but I had to accept her wishes. The Duskers allowed all kinds of genders and sexes on board, but when it came to children, only traditional families were allowed. Even if it was a gay couple, one of the parents had to stay with the child and abandon almost all dreams of a career until the child had grown into its late teenage years. Of course, traditional heterosexual couples were the norm, and while other combinations were allowed, they were discouraged in many ways. The Duskers had convinced themselves that their ways were the best for mankind. The fact they were doing better than the old world only reinforced their beliefs. I always felt the smugness of it when they talked to me about Earth or the other colonies. It was an understatement that my tongue had gotten me into a lot of arguments over the last years, and most of them hovered around the idea that the old colonies somehow had a choice in joining the Federation. I'll be there to wish you a safe trip, Richard, Freya said as she put her arms around me. I kissed her forehead and pulled her into an embrace. She was warm and smelled like chamomile. I'd missed the scent and her warmth and our petty arguments and everything about her. Take care of yourself and the baby. She nodded and graced me with a smile. Don't piss them off too much this time. I looked into her eyes and almost teared up. She was brave. She was strong and smart and beautiful, but most of all, she was compassionate. Sometimes she would anticipate how I would feel about something and was already prepared to handle it before I even knew what I felt. On the other hand, she was fiercely loyal to the Dusk Ascendant.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?